Well, I don't like the idea to have investors of my company right now. So I'm because they try to grow too quickly. You know, it's just, they start growing without making sure they have like a good reputation and making money on the whole thing. Like, we don't open more properties if we are not making money in the old ones.
Hello, friends and travelers. Thanks for listening. You are riding along on the Hostel Road Trip podcast. Our mission is to spread awareness of the true hostel experience in the Americas and share stories from the fascinating hosts who create those unique facilities. I'm your host, Jimmy Black, joined alongside co-founder of International Travelers House, Bobby Dyer. Each session, we sit down with hostel operators or travel influencers to hear about their road to success, discuss trending hostel topics, and close with tips for travelers who are seeking to have the ultimate experience when visiting each destination. You can't afford to miss this trip. Now fasten your seatbelts and let's hit the road.
All right. Welcome back to the Hostel Road Trip podcast. We are here, myself, Jimmy Black, and Bobby Dyer of ITH Hostels. We are here with Mateus of Che Hostels in Mexico. Thank you so much for joining us for this exciting episode. And we're going to be diving into not only Mateus' personal journey into hostels, but also what it's like to run multiple hostels as Che's grown into quite a force down there in Mexico, and then touch into a bit about the hostel industry in Mexico and a lot of the really cool things going on down there. I always feel like Mexico's really in as far as hostels go, authentic, genuine backpacker hostel vibe and style of traveler is really cool to experience down there. Whereas a lot of other countries are going in a different direction with hostels, they're becoming more like hotels or becoming very much catered to like the American clientele up here who's into more privacy. So I think Mexico is just right for the experience of hosteling. But Mateus, tell us how you got into hosteling. What was your first exposure, you know, as a guest or as a staff worker?
Well, thanks for having me here, guys. My first experience with hostels was probably when we were on traveling on a really low budget. So we sleep on a tent with my friends on the background of the street or whatever we can sleep for free, going to a bar, and there were people saying, yeah, we pay really cheap in that place called a hostel. We were paying zero sleeping on the street. And there were people saying, no, this is a cool place, hostel, for $1, $2 in Argentina. So of course we have no money at that time, so we just keep sleeping for free on the tent until I start working and get some cash. I say, okay, I will go to this place that they call hostel and see if they look cool people all in the bar and not like fancy ones. So that was the first time I heard about hostel, like probably drinking in a bar with random guests. I was like 18, 17, something like that. And I guess my first time in a hostel was when I was 19. I was traveling by myself alone for 5 days and say, okay, time to go to a hostel and see, to meet some people. And since that point, I started just every time I travel, Europe, Argentina, Peru, US was always in hostels. It was always the vibe, the party, the meeting people, going out, drinking. Like when you are 18, 19, 20, you can go to the museum, but the important thing is that meet people and hang out. So that's how I get into like the life of the hostel industry. And then I used to be an engineer, or I guess I still am. I used to work in IBM and big like Microsoft. And I just quit everything and moved to Mexico.
Oh, wow.
When I was something like, I moved to Mexico. And I decided it was time to move to Mexico and be a photographer or something like that. That never really worked out. I was supposed to be a snorkeling photographer. I just broke my first camera when I went down the water. I was, yeah. So I stayed in a hostel and I was living for like 6 months in a hostel in Playa del Carmen, like 12 years ago. And but that time I was in the best hostel of Playa del Carmen, and it was probably a horrible hostel. I mean, it was amazing, but you know, like this kind of old bunk beds with full of bed bags, and they have like this free breakfast every day with coffee, bread, and a big jar of, I cannot believe it's not butter. And, like, yeah, that was my breakfast for 6 months. And I was remember, like, you know, in Europe, the hotel was more fancy, more nice. But this hotel was amazing. It had some food, party, vibes, everything. It was really all, like, so I started thinking, okay, I think I can do this, like, better, like, if I have the opportunity. And then in one moment during my stay in Playa Carmen, there was a building that were supposed to become a hostel, and then the owner stopped the idea, and he decided to create apartments, and we were living there. And I say, hey, instead of change everything, if this is a kind of a old hostel, let me just pay the rent, the whole building, and I can, like, take the property. And that's how we start. Like, it was like an old build. It was an old hostel that the owners quit, and the owner of the property is going to change into apartment. And I told him, like, keep it like that. I will pay the rent. You don't put any dollar. I just will keep the old blank bed, the old mattress, and I will start to create a hotel here. And that's how we started. Like, that was 13 years ago in Playa del Carmen. And it was a good time for Playa del Carmen.
So that first location was Playa del Carmen.
Yeah, at that time, everyone was going to Playa del Carmen. That was really helpful. Like, it was fucking full every time. Like, New Year was madness. Yeah. It was before Tulum exists. It was before, like, all the new destinations in Mexico really pop up. At that time, everyone was supposed to go to Playa del Carmen. And that really helped. Like, you have any shit place, and it will work. For a few years, everything was like, yeah. So that helped us to start, like, you know, you start having guests quickly. I remember it was like $3 a bed, something like, we were the cheapest one when we started. And, you know, no reviews, no experience, just shall go cheap.
Wow. So that was the first location. How long before you opened your second location after that?
Yeah, we opened a small restaurant that didn't really work out. So we have another business for 3-4 years. And then 4 years after the first one, we decided to open the second hostel. And it was lucky that I went to a conference in Madrid, the one I met you, like, in Oregon last year. At that conference, there was a lot of people from the industry. And I was thinking to open a second property in Playa del Carmen. The hour was for like 50 beds, but it was always full. So I was thinking, okay, it's time to have maybe a second location in Playa, with maybe cheaper, different. But then when I went to the conference, I was asking to people that have multiple properties in Europe. And one of them, they were in Russia, they told me, it's better to open like second location because you will learn much more with two different locations, and if something happened with the first location, you will have the second one. And so I took that advice from the conference, and so I changed my mind to go to second location, Playa del Carmen, and we went to Tulum. That it was starting having some name at the point, because at the beginning I would say there is nothing in Tulum, but that was like 8 years ago. Tulum was just people start going there. So that's why we decided, okay, it's time to go to a second location 4 years after the first one. I went because I went to a conference and I took the advice of people who already have multiple properties. If not, I would probably have the mistake to have the second Playa del Carmen, make some money for a few years, and then when Playa del Carmen went down, I would probably really, really, really down, because Tulum saved Playa del Carmen when Playa got really bad years after that.
Yeah, no, that's very good advice in that. You know, of course, it is challenging to have more than one location, you know, especially in different cities. But it really does give yourself that diversity that if a particular city that you're operating out of starts to have a downtrend or a downtick that really isn't in your control, you can really have that strength within the variety of your locations and also in different seasons and things like that. So how many Che hostels are there in total?
Right now, we open the 9-1 next Monday in San Cristobal. Wow.
Congratulations.
Where is that one open?
It's in San Cristobal in Chiapas. It's like it's the middle of the connection between the Caribbean side with the Pacific side in the mountains.
Like, oh. You go to
it's the first one with no pool and in the winter. It's a cold.
That's exciting. Yes, congratulations. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that's 9-1.
That's number 9. Go get them. Wow. Now, with that, you know, that's a huge jump right there. You know, we were talking about opening a second location and the challenges, but also the benefits of the variety. Now that you're all the way up there, moving into that ninth location, how has your structure evolved? You know, would you say that you have a lot of like departmentalization or management levels, or how often do you get your, you know, hands in the sauce of like actually working at the hostels? How has that evolved for you?
Right now, I'm not on the direct operation anymore. Still, even I go to all the hostels to talk to the people, and I don't talk to the guests. I talk to the guests, but as an infiltrator guest, like I just go to the pool and just talk to the guests, but they don't know who I am. But I talk to the employees. Right now, we learned that we have regions. Like every two hostels, we have a region. Then we have four hostels in the Caribbean side. So we have people. Like one region in the Caribbean, one region in the Pacific, so they can travel between them. But for example, we have right now Plaza and Holbox Island. They are just one manager for those two, and then you have Tulum and Bacalar, which is like 2 hours different. You have another guy from those two, and then one above for the four of them on the operation level. And then operation, I mean like receptionist, food and beverage, like the bartender, cleaning, maintenance. And then we have like a kind of a corporate or back office that you have, you know, the bookies, marketing, supplies, IT. And we have a main office in Playa del Carmen, but there's not too many people right there. And then we have maybe one people of marketing content in like the Pacific side, and one guy of booking that works on the Pacific side. I mean, they have one leader, but we have people spread around the country. In the past, we used to have like all the corporate in the office, but they were like the connection between the office and the operation. And there was a fighting between the office. Like, you are always sitting with AC. We are here on the front desk. And so it was a lot. So we decided to start moving the people. So, okay, you're going to take care of those two properties. So you're going to leave to that city. And you're going to be working from the hostel, in the co-working, like in your home, or most of the time on the hostel, talking with the operation. So, because sometimes someone buys something from mistake and the bartender say, no, I didn't buy this, I ordered other thing, but the guy delivered me this alcohol, we don't sell this. If everyone is on the same place, they are together. So, okay, they have to sort it together. It's not that email saying, it's not my fault, it was the office. And the office say, no, it was the operation. So we try to put the people from the office in the operation right now. Because if not, there were no integration. There was some fighting for my department, your department, and at the end, we are one company, one guest.
Yeah, yeah, no, and that's some great advice and insights into that of how to scale up in this business and have the multiple locations. And I think it's probably relevant to all business operations, but so often you have the people that are, you know, on the scene, the foot soldiers, and then you have the people behind the curtain, and they're both telling a different story and blaming each other, and then that falls on you and flows up.
If something blows up, but they're both on the operation, even if you work in the office, but you are in the operation, like you can help to solve the problem. It's not like you are 1,000 miles away and you just got a WhatsApp say, I don't know, like you are both there, you have to, even they're still fighting between operation and back office, but they are together. So because it's a big, they always blame one, like the operation from the back office is fighting
sometimes. You'll spend all of your time running around trying to catch up with the latest one's report. But that's something that definitely we've experienced the similar of, you know, it's so important to integrate those two and to have them working together and to keep people on site and in touch with the experience and the operation across the board from front to back. You know, that's such a great help.
I think it's key that a lot of people from the back office, before they work on the operation, right? The people from the booking before used to work on like receptionist, so they know how it is. Mm-hmm. Those that maybe they never work on the operation, like maybe human resources sometimes or the marketing, they sometimes don't understand how it's having like a guest complaining in front of you, screaming, like all the shit happening in the hostel. But if you work there and then you move to the office, you have more empathy with the team. When, you know, I remember when I was receptionist, that was horrible. So you try to help when that happened.
Absolutely, you know, 100%. And you know, we absolutely agree with that, with you know, promoting from within and moving people from, you know, that side to the other side, and now they can have that relevant connection. And then also the operation people have to, they have respect for them too, because they know, okay, this person had my job before, they know what I'm talking about. So I think there's so many advantages to that. That's awesome to see. So now, so you had said it was your first one without a pool. So all the other locations have like a pool and a bar and a restaurant, or just a bar? What does each one of them have, one of those type of side operations?
All of the rest have a swimming pool, one of them bigger than the others. And we have a bar and restaurant in most of them. But for example, in Playa del Carmen, which is the first one, it's really small and it's full of restaurants around. We only make like dinner party, like pizza night or burger. We don't have a proper restaurant because it's too small the place, and it's during daytime, it's like it's too hot and it's full of restaurants around. But it's the only one probably. In all of the rest, we have like a full restaurant with breakfast, lunch, and dinner. In the past, I remember when I used to say, like, I will never charge for a breakfast, because breakfast in the hostel is supposed to be free. But then when people start changing, the guests change. And I remember having like better breakfast, and it was 100 people going for a free breakfast with every seat. And I remember one complaint saying, they only have one type of cheese. Okay, so you know what? Yeah. We're going to charge it, then I make it great. Like, it's not going to be free anymore, because it doesn't matter what you do, if it's free, they're always going to find a way to complain. And it was a mess of 100 guys arriving 10 minutes before close, eating everything. And they get used to, like, right, like, I remember, like, big change, like, selling in the past, generator, they start selling, and people got used to pay for breakfast. And so we changed, and we have our, like, full restaurant right now. And it was never a problem, and we have less complaints about the free breakfast.
Yeah, no, and that's the evolution of things. I know what you mean by that. Some ways, sometimes you start with such a perspective in one way, and over time, you know, you learn to change with it and adapt. How much of a revenue from like the food and beverage compared to the hostel beds? What would you say is like a general percentage? Like, is it like a half and half, or like what makes most?
For us, it's 30% food and beverage. Like in the food company, like of course some destinations are like higher or lower, but in the food company it's 30%, like probably 20 something beverage, and 8-10% is food, and then 70% is between accommodation and experience. Experience we are not selling much. We need to make a big change there, because we have a lot of location, but we never really invest on having like a tour operation. But we should, because it's another revenue income that we should have in so many locations. We are just, like, not using the logistic and all the people that we have to start having our own tour. We have, but we are not making such a money, such a revenue that we can.
Yeah.
It's interesting as we have a hostel in Mexico, you know, there's so many US and Canadian travelers that come down. Right. So you're really hosting completely different customers compared to the Mexican travelers. Right. So you got to cater to both sides, I guess. How have you strategized to do both those? And what is the, you know, maybe ties into the bar element, but the best strategy to have a hostel in Mexico that can cater to Mexicans and also to foreigners? What have you found to work best?
It's a difficult question, because first of all, Mexicans are not so used to traveling hostels, even though now it's growing and growing. Like 15 years ago, it wasn't so like the most common. And then we have 90% of our guests, they are not Mexican. So we have only 10-12% of Mexican. But now we see that market is still growing. And I don't like when I receive a bad review saying, I feel like racist or something because I'm Mexican. You know, I feel like everyone was speaking English, or all the sign was in English and not in Spanish. So it's difficult, because 90% of our customers are from the rest of the world. And
Yeah, that's a challenge.
We don't have a specific strategy to say, okay, we want to this culture feel happy. We try to make everyone feel happy. So, like, you know, sometimes we have, of course, we do tacos, but the tacos are not so, they're kind of more tourist tacos. So it's a Mexican probably eat. We say that's not a weed at home.
We but had that happen to us. Yeah, the Mexican. Yeah, we tried to serve tacos and they laughed at us.
Yeah, that happened.
Now, what about for Che Hostels? You're at nine now, open up your ninth one. How many do you have, like, a goal in mind of how many you'd like to have, or is that not something that's really like how you work it, or how many locations do you think you're going to go for?
We're planning to have the complete south of Mexico. We're planning to have like 12. We need going to Oaxaca, Mexico City, and probably Isla Mujeres. That will be like a nice spot. But Mexico City and Oaxaca are probably the other two locations that we would like to have because nice. a lot of tourists, they enter to the country in Cancun and make all the south, Cancun, Playa Carmen, Tulum, Bacalar, and they cross to the Pacific side, you know, Puerto Escondido, Oaxaca, and end the trip in Mexico City. So Mexico City and Cancun are the main airports. So most of the tourists that we have, they enter from one of those airports and make all the round. From Mexico City to like north, we our customers probably different, like maybe Sayulita, Guadalajara, Los Cabos. It's kind of a sometimes different people, not different, another kind of trip. That's why we're thinking Oaxaca and Mexico City, because if you start in Mexico City and start going down, you will go to Oaxaca, Puerto Escondido, San Cristobal. If you go to Cancun, you will. So that's like our kind of our road, no? From Cancun to Mexico City.
That's awesome. Of course, that's great. Yeah, it's tough to juggle all of them, but 12 is a good number right there. Yeah, that's a solid. Now, what do you think about for the hostel industry in Mexico? What do you feel about? Do you feel like there's still a lot of growth that's going to happen with more hostels opening, or is there enough space for that to happen? What do you think?
Yeah, the industry is growing, and it's going to keep growing for the next 10 years because all these people are getting more and more used to traveling hostels. But also the competition is growing, like more chains are arriving. For example, Viajeros arrived like two years ago, and now they have four or five. And it's getting more professional, like another company. They're getting investment from big groups. So you can start seeing this hostel of 400 beds or 300 beds arriving to Mexico. So the industry, like the market will grow, but sometimes the offering is growing quicker. And you can see, like, for example, in Puerto Escondido, we opened 2 years ago, and now in that we were not the first one, of course, but now like it's getting like more and more hostels opening. So maybe in 2-3 years, it's gonna be too many hostels in one location. Yeah. The same happened to Tulum. Tulum right now is full of hostels and no tourists. And now Tulum is going down. So you know, it's like it's not a mature country on hostels. It's a lot of destinations are new. Like Playa Carmen is new, Tulum is quite new, Puerto Escondido is in a boom. So a lot of destinations it's not like New York or Madrid that you have like tourists, like you know how it's gonna be. Like Sayulita is the same, it's going up and down, up and down.
No, it is an interesting ride and aspect to the industry in Mexico. You know, you kind of catch the wave of the town as it's becoming popular, as it's on its rise. You can ride that wave, but then there's the other side of it as well. Now,
we're really lucky with it, having on the ride, because we've been in Playa, because I was in Playa and I was just the boom. Then we moved to Tulum, I was a boom. And then we said, the next one, Holbox was a boom. And now we went to Puerto Escondido, but we are maybe 1 year later. But now Puerto Escondido is probably 40% of the income from the company is coming from Puerto Escondido. It's fully full, while the rest is having like problems right now. Like Tulum, right now, everyone is suffering because it's just too many offering right now. The tourism is down. So those waves are good and are bad.
That helps with the multiple locations, right? Because if you were one operation in Tulum, you might be in a lot of trouble right now because
fighting Tulum, you won't be worked.
Yeah.
You have fighting Tulum, you won't. Like, yeah. If we didn't open Puerto right now, we were kind of like, okay, we were probably like going even between all of the properties because a few of them are just going down this year.
Yeah, yeah, no, we know that game well. Yeah.
What is your reaction to, you know, Salina going bankrupt and now they just left Sayulita? They, you know, they're gone. So how do you avoid becoming Salina? Obviously, it was a beautiful brand, great branding, beautiful property, but didn't make any money and went out of business. You know, so how do you go grow but avoid becoming them?
A few of them make a lot of money when they went to the market, and then a few people make some money there than there in the way. Not the investors, probably, but the founders, probably they make money. Well, I don't like the idea to have investors of my company right now. So I'm because they try to grow too quickly. You know? They start growing without making sure they have like a good reputation and making money on the whole thing. Like, we don't open more properties if we're not making money in the old ones. Maybe we have one bad or two bad. But Selena just open. And then the quality were bad, and they get too expensive on rent. I think all the brokers make a lot of money because what Selina paid for the property was insane. Like, I would never pay that much money. Like, you cannot make money with this rent. But the brokers, they say, oh, have this beautiful location, rent it, I don't know, so much money, and they just rent and start working, hoping that in the future they will make money. And then when things go bad, these kind of expensive, like too expensive rents, they just went. I don't know how they could make money with those rents.
I don't know. And it's interesting. I don't know if you see the same thing at your location, but I feel like the travelers in Mexico, the market is like kind of party and surf. You know, there's kind of that backpacker party surf, and then there's kind of luxury, you know, and you got to kind of you got to go one way or the other to really fill up. And I feel like Salina was kind of like luxury budget. So there was kind of like, they missed the mark because the opt-in, there wasn't the vibe. You know, it was too corporate, felt too big. So travelers said, I just didn't get to meet anybody. It's nice, beautiful product, but it just didn't have the community vibe, even though, you know, they tried to put on the events. Or you go with the maybe luxury the vibe. But
maybe the ones they have in Panama, or the first one that was much more focused on the experience. But you cannot grow like 10 hostels in a month or like 50 hostels in a year and have managers and experienced team. There is not so many professionals on the industry. Like, it's a new industry. You cannot find 50 managers with 10 years of experience. So they open, and they will have, it was a hotel with beds and no experience team. But the first one of Selena, probably the ones in Panama and Costa Rica, they were really nice and good, and you have very nice reviews. Lucky us, in Mexico, they probably have the worst management. Because all the Selena in Mexico are really, really well managed compared with the other countries they have.
What do you do to, when you're opening your new locations, to get that vibe right and get it off on the right foot? As you know, we can relate to this, but I'm interested in your perspective. As it's a very tricky dance to open up a new location and then leave, you know, and make sure that it stays on course. What do you focus on to try to make sure it gets off on the right foot and you can leave and it stays on the right foot as you had envisioned?
Well, I would say like we have a big family team. Like we have friends inside the company. Like we're on holiday with our like teammates and the workmates. Like right now, because a lot of people, we have a lot of people from other countries working on the company, but even Mexican people, they are not from Tulum. They are not from Playa del Carmen, because these are all tourist destinations. So it's people from Guadalajara and Mexico City. So they leave their family behind, and we have a really family like team. So the managers and the leads of the company have been with us for like 10 years, 7 years, and they all start like the receptionists or volunteers. So that keeps the you know, the staff is a really hostel staff. They really enjoy being in the hostel. So that keeps the vibe. Like, you know, when you find a manager, you know that he used to be in the bar, then he went to reception, then he's friends from this other guy who works together because the family are abroad. So that keeps the, you know, the team really connected. Most of them, you know, that they work and they go home. Like, they work and they go home and they come to the bar because their friends are their workmates. So that keeps the vibe in all the destinations working. The only thing I'm seen the last time. It's like managers are getting old. We all get old. But you cannot have the same, you see the guests, they are always the same age. I don't know what they do. They always 20 something. And we're always getting higher. So if the managers start getting kind of the 30, 35, something like that, then start getting like, they don't have the energy they have when they are 25. They need to go in now to talk to everyone. And you cannot have the same problems like 1 year, second year. So after a few years, you start getting tired as a manager to dealing with these kids of, the UK is 20 something breaking the wall, or they just smashing things because they are drunk. So you need to keep the managers and receptionists full of energy. So I'm seeing that now you need to keep a young team, to be honest, to work most of, because it's kind of, we are on the beach. So if surf is party, it's going out, people on the beach are more wanting going out. So you need to have people who is willing to accept to have like a destroyer's guest. They're going to get high, get drunk, breaking the rules, everything. And as the manager, they start getting tired after a few years with the same like issues. And say, again, this guy, again, this happened. So they start losing connection with the guests and also with the employees, because the employees make the same problems also. Sometimes they are worse than the guests. So that's the only thing. And keep growing, allow us to move the managers or the reception leader to like more, to have like a panoramic view of the company. So they start working 2-3 properties. So they can manage delivery, be focused, and you keep the youngest like connecting with the people on the front. But I would say like that we have a big family, which was difficult to build. But right now, a lot of people, they can have better salaries in 5-star hotels or whatever. But because it's a really big family, when they had to leave, they really think about, because they really enjoy working on the hostel, working with their teammates, and enjoying the parties with the guests and with their teammates. But yeah, that also brings the other side. They go out, they drink, they get laid between each other, and then they fight, and then you have a romance, and then you have people complaining, and they get, all the problems when you work on another country, 25, on the beach party in Tulum. Yeah. Things happen.
No, that's so true. But great advice, to look at it and build it like a family. Those are pillars, in the foundation. And then if you grow from there, I find that going in that, promote from within, build that family style atmosphere, you do get people that stay, that put a value on that quality of life and happiness that you provide within that. And then that inspires the people beneath them, to want to stay as well. It's actually, unfortunately, it's not a very common thing to find, because there's so many more corporate style structures and big box style companies that you're not going to get that intimacy of a family style run operation. We just got our baby size ITH shirts for Bobby's kids and some of the other managers that are now having babies and whatnot. So, I think that's a great thing to create that culture.
Yeah, I laughed. Somebody, I took my kids in there we were doing one of the parties of the hostel community night. And I had my kid run around in there, and one of the guests was like, "What is this, a nursery?" And I was like, "Damn, that's it. I'm that old guy with the kid, hanging out at the hostel, messing up the vibe." So I can relate to that. But
the guests are always 20,
right? Yeah, it's like Groundhog Day. But before you go, we definitely want to get some insight on the Naha conference coming to Playa del Carmen. We're excited that it's going to be hosted there. I guess give us a little announcement about what you expect and what the plan is for all the people looking to come to the conference.
Well, we want to make it fun. Definitely, it should be fun, and we would like to have a lot of like activities that include also enjoying the, because it's the Caribbean side, and it's a really April is a 1 to 2 of April. It's a really nice weather in Playa del Carmen. So we want to have like maybe have some spots or some space to just enjoy the swimming pool with a margarita, enjoying Mexican food while sharing knowledge. And also we have the post trip to Holbox Island, which is probably one of the most beautiful destinations when it's in the good season. And so I would like to have like, a really confident that you will share knowledge and we have a really good speakers. Also, like to enjoy the Caribbean and to enjoy the Mexico, no? Because in when you're in US or Canada, it's more like a professional, more like a call, like no, more a corporate. While here, we're probably gonna be in sandals and shorts, and and drinking and enjoying the swimming pool. So we want to mix, like you know, the vibe in Mexico, in the Caribbean of Mexico, plus the connection between a lot of the your industry, which is it's always nice to go to a conference of hostels. You know, it's always young people and knowledge people, and it's not boring like an IT conference where I used to go when I was an engineer. A hostel industry conference are always fun. I always happy people enjoying drinking, and a lot of professionals around that create the knowledge that help us to keep growing, no? So it's gonna be, hope it's gonna be different. It's gonna be Mexican Caribbean life.
Nice.
Yeah, sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today at Che Hostels. I definitely made me want to go visit some of your places. I'm putting that on my bucket list for a little personal vacation. But
we have a conference in April. You're welcome to come share your knowledge and have some drinks here.
Oh, I could be a patron at every one of those bars. But I look forward to it, and I absolutely look forward to the Naha conference coming in April 2025. Make sure all of you get your tickets and make your travel arrangements. It's going to be a fun one, and I think it's going to be one of the best conferences for the hostel industry ever. So looking forward to it. Thanks so much, guys.
No, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Bye, guys. Bye. See you soon.